Welcome to Heart Yoga Radio. This is a short podcast in which I attempt to elucidate the relationship between yoga and commercialism. Strange bedfellows indeed. You wouldn't think there was any connection at all. And in my naivety, many years ago, I never dreamed there could be any kind of connection until I happened upon a glossy magazine. It was coming out of the United States at the time. It's going back a few years. Which was full of just glossy adverts. And some of the adverts were for yoga products, yoga courses, yoga teacher trainings. Yoga for this, that and the other that's going to improve your life in much the same manner as Coca-Cola, etc. And I suppose I'm a bit of an old-fashioned socialist in some ways, and I found this kind of profoundly offensive. And subsequently I found I'm not alone in this response. This, since that time, this tendency has gone absolutely, it's spreading like a cancer. You can go to a certain event in London where you'll see this stuff absolutely rampant. And the whole thing promoted with all the apparatus of Madison Avenue. And similarly, the glossy magazines have proliferated somewhat, and it's the same thing, you know. This is basically all about commerce. I think some people get dollar signs in their eyes when they realise that you could charge maybe $2,000 for a teacher training course, get 20 people on it, or 40 or 50 or 100, and and make some nice dosh. Of course, what goes on with commercialism is advertising. And I would put it to you that advertising is intrinsically untruthful. Somebody characterised the advertising that's central to consumer capitalism as the manufacture of dissatisfaction. And it strikes me that that's right, and it doesn't take very much reflection or much study to verify this. Now, why is this being used to sell yoga classes, yoga products or accessories, clothing, training courses and so on? It strikes me there is an absolute antagonism between yoga and commercialism. I mean, if we trust Patanjali as any kind of authority. We find that central to yoga as practice is satya, truthfulness. Now, some people think this is a highly kind of moral thing. And that it attempts to impose certain behaviour patterns on human beings in order to make them better people. I don't actually think this is what Patanjali is getting at with the yamas and niyamas, of which satya is one. He's actually telling you that in being truthful, first of all with yourself, as best you can, bearing in mind that self-deception can go very deep, but nevertheless that this practice of truthfulness with oneself is fruitful yoga practice. And personally I'm of the opinion that this is dead right, you know, on the basis of many decades of practice of Patanjali's yoga. Now, truthfulness to oneself, would I would say naturally extend into a desire to be truthful beyond oneself in one's interactions and one's dealings. And I think that's right too. Now, again, not particularly as a moral endeavour to produce certain types of character structure, but simply because it makes the world a better place, and for the individual practitioner, it simplifies life. And if you're going to seriously get into yoga and find out the great goods which it embodies, you do need to get really solidly to grips with its practices. And you need, therefore, if at all possible, and for most people this applies, to simplify things down. You don't want to be being dragged off the court every 5 minutes because your dealings with other people are dishonest, not in line with Satya. You won't get on with your practice if you're in that scenario. So there's a couple of reasons there why Satya recommends itself. Now, if you're a yoga teacher, you know, somebody practiced yoga for years and you want to share it, or your friends have asked you to share it, which seems to me to be the right way to go into this, you've got to make a living, you know, we need to eat and all the rest of it. And yoga then becomes, or then gains a new aspect in which it becomes a part of the economy. It has an economic dimension. Even if you as a yoga teacher rely on generosity, dana, donations, as is a respected method in the East, you're still engaged in economic activity. And where that works is when it is supported by the culture, where begging isn't thought to be shameful, and so forth. In our culture, you're probably going to have to enter into some kind of market activity. I see all that. I don't even have any kind of a gripe against prosperity. In fact, I want to live in a world in which everybody is prosperous. You know, as long as that doesn't tax the planet to extinction or produce gross and disgusting differentials of wealth and power. Basically, it's prosperity, yeah, cool. Don't have a puritanical gripe with it. But I do have a puritanical gripe, if you like, with untruthfulness in yoga. And when yoga gets mixed up with commerce, untruthfulness comes in. Because advertising is central to commerce, as we know it, modern consumerist capitalist commerce. And advertising copy is always untruthful, because truthful statements of fact about what it is that one does, about the extent of one's understanding or not, and the extent of one's experience or not, doesn't make good advertising copy. And just on that basis, I think that wedding between yoga and commercialism it's an unholy wedding, it's an unholy alliance, definitely. I suppose another thing that Patanjali recommends is non-grasping, parigriha. Non-grasping, non-greed, you might say that, isn't it? And I think, again, he's talking about personal practice primarily. But if one grasps for enlightenment, it will elude. That's the only thing that makes it elude, really, is grasping for it. And this, of course, is our paradoxical koan that we have to kind of work with as practitioners of definite procedures. But again, it also will naturally extend outwards into your dealings with the world. And again, you know, this kind of grasping for customers that goes down in the marketplace, and that you can see in the glossies, and you can see at the kind of big razzmatazz commercial yoga events, and on the websites of various organisations, which is again inimical to yoga. So there's two, and I could kind of go on, no doubt, but there's two kind of really solid reasons for not wanting to be involved in that commercialism as a yoga person. Now there's another point I want to make here, and that is just to register my amazement that many yoga people don't register this disjunction between their avowed commitment to the practice of yoga and the being states of yoga that can then emerge on the one hand, and just an utter willingness, an utter unreflective and unquestioning willingness to engage in commercialism. And to have no questions, that it strikes me as just an absolute failure on the part of yoga people if they're not questioning consumerist capitalism right at the outset, instead of just taking it for granted. But many do take it for granted. I think of one large yoga organisation in the UK, and the website is just full of the language of business. And I think when you get the language of business, that's going to import all the nonsense and all the temptations to untruthfulness and all the grasping for commerce, for customers, for an empire and all the rest of it. Yet they just talk this language of business all the time. Talk about the yoga industry. You know? How to get more bums on seats by operating a CPD racket, which actually is starting to look like a Ponzi scheme. Talking about your business plan and your business model and all this kind of stuff. All of this presupposes that consumerist capitalism is beyond question. And it's not even beyond question from the yoga point of view, certainly from the point of view of Patanjali's apparently ethical injunctions. And really, I think the people who are engaged in this stuff in this unreflective way need to reflect. I think they have a case against them to answer. Because this stuff is antithetical to yoga. The commerce comes in, the yoga goes out the window. And I think if you understand that, you understand the bad feeling that quite a lot of people get when they walk around that particular bazaar in London every year, which somehow they feel compelled to attend nevertheless, to meet up with people to see what's going on and all the rest of it. So, what to do? You know, well, first of all, I would really like it to there's much more debate about this out in the open, and that those propagating this nonsense actually stand up and defend their position, because at least that would entice the people in question to examine what they obviously up till now have not examined, which is the whole nature of commercialism, the whole nature of consumerist capitalism, the whole nature of advertising, if you want to come a bit closer to home, the whole nature of the economic aspect of yoga that comes into play if people want to share what they do. I think that what we should be doing, those of us who are concerned by this stuff, is to really work diligently on building a culture of honesty, in which satya is just a straightforward value, and that as yoga people, in our dealings with other people, that we strive, even though we may not attain perfection in this matter, but we strive for honesty, and we state plainly what it is we're about, what it is that we do, and we get away from the kind of false promises and the sticky language of business, and the whole glossy razzmatazz of it, that we just develop something that's much better, much truer, and we build it from the ground up. Actually, just build it obviously every now and then I think you might have to kind of push aside something that gets in the way of that project, you know, but and I think so be it. But the basic next manoeuvre, yeah, is this. Let's be truthful and let's build it. Let's build a yoga culture that is founded on truthfulness and honesty.